Get ready for episode number 660.
It's time for Road Trekking, the podcast. Traveling North America in a small motor home. Exploring, camping, boondocking, embracing the RV lifestyle, and sharing tips and where to go and how to keep things running right. Here's award-winning journalist Mike Wendland and his network of road trekking reporters.
Hello, everybody. That is me, Mike Wendland, and welcome to the podcast. This is for you, whether you have a small RV like the Road Trek Jennifer and I travel in, whether you have a great big Class A motorhome, maybe a fifth wheel, a pop-up, heck, even if you dry camp out of your car or tent and are just thinking about getting an RV. This show is for you. We talk about being out there, enjoying God's creation, meeting interesting people, finding great campsites, exploring the countryside, as well as sharing tips on keeping our RVs running right and using the right gear and technology to enhance our camping and RV experience. That's what Road Trekking the Podcast is all about, the RV lifestyle. This episode of Road Trekking the RV Podcast is brought to you by Van City RV in St. Louis and their partner dealerships, Creston RV in Kalispell, Montana, and Wagon Trail RV in Las Vegas, bringing you the largest inventory of Class Bs from three locations across the country. By Aldi, A-L-D-E, the only name you need to know when choosing a heating system for your RV. By Verizon Wireless, the nation's largest and most reliable 4G LTE network. And Leisure Time RV, a family-owned dealership in Central Florida. Your vacation starts at Leisure Time RV. We've got so much coming up in this episode. We have a great interview a little bit later on with our friend Gary Bunser, the RV doctor. And he tells us the five things every RVer must know. This is must listen, folks. There's so much more that he's got to teach us, and this will be a good start tonight. We also have a lot of other things. We got the Farmer's Almanac winter forecast for you, no matter what region of North America you're in. And we've got, of course, lots of RV news, a destination of the week, and some tech tips, all coming up in this episode of Road Trekking the RV Podcast. Well, welcome aboard, everybody. It's time now to bring on my lifelong traveling companion and my bride, Jennifer. Hello, my dear.
Hello, Michael.
Well, we're getting ready to head off again. We've got a big rally we're going to next week in Florida.
That'll be fun.
Actually, it's not that big. It's one of the ones that we like. It's just about, you know, a couple three dozen people, maybe four dozen, I don't know.
But yeah, good learning experience and strengthen old friendships and make new.
Yeah, we'll talk about that in the RV calendar section of the broadcast coming up, but let's see, what else? Oh, we're waiting for some new glass to be put in our road trek.
Life is just one great big adventure and learning experience.
We're not sure what happened. We think maybe it was some neighborhood kids in the area that we were in last week down south that were maybe tossing a football after dark. And, well, the football, somebody missed a catch and ba-boom, it hit the side window of our RV. It's actually a piece of glass. It looks like a window. It was a big piece of tinted glass. And, you know, I don't think they would have known that they did that because it wouldn't have broken like when a window breaks. It would have just like shattered. So they probably heard a big thud and said, oops, and then got the football, moved on. And then I went a little later on. I came out that night and I opened the side door and all that shattered glass dropped out. So,
well, it was good we discovered it that night. And actually, it could have been three things: vandals, kids playing, or mystery.
Or a mystery.
You know, mystery. Who knows?
We don't know. This kind of stuff happens, but you know, it's great. We called the factory. They're sending it up. We got a guy down in Albany, Georgia, who's going to put it in for us, and everything's good.
It is all good.
It's all an adventure. You know what? And that's true of all the setbacks in life that you have. It's how you handle them. What's your attitude is towards them, right?
Right.
And we've had more than our share of setbacks this year, and it's still been an absolutely great year of RVing.
They're all learning experiences.
We got, I like the way you call it, we got robbed. You got sick in the hospital.
And discovered that there are 10-bed hospitals out there that can treat
10
you.
10-bed hospitals in Montana with the most spectacular view outside your window. And anyway, and it's just an adventure. And it's
fun. I got to admit, when I was in the hospital, I was getting cranky.
you weren't that cranky.
I was getting cranky.
You were maybe the staff, but you were nice to me and Ty. You were good. They let you bring our dog in the hospital. That was nice.
That was very nice.
All right. Well, we've got so much to talk about in this episode, so let's start off with your part.
Is it a gadget? A recipe? A tip? Whatever she has in store for us, it promises to make the RV lifestyle a little more fun or efficient. Here's Jennifer with her RV tip of the week.
This week, I have a whole bunch of tips. I call them life hacks for RVers, little things that can make a big difference. I have 7 of them, life hacks I've either learned myself or been taught by others. Number 1, you want to quickly freshen up the inside of your RV. Maybe there's a stale smell or it's been sitting idle for a while. Tape a dryer sheet over the AC and turn it on for a few minutes. Number 2, we all have trash cans in our RV. We also use a plastic bag in those trash receptacles. Put old newspaper at the bottom of your trash can, inside the plastic bag, to absorb food juices that may spill. Number 3, when you're on the road, where do you keep that dirty laundry? Try keeping a bar of scented soap in the same compartment as your dirty laundry. It will help the clothes smell a little cleaner than they really are. Number 4, here's one we learned from some photo classes. When you're taking a photo of someone or someone is taking a picture of you, your smile will look a lot more genuine if, instead of just smiling, you also squint your eyes. Try this. It really works. Number 5, here's one Mike learned. If you can't find any ready kindling wood to start your campfire, you're not going to believe this, use a handful of Doritos. Really, they burn just like kindling and can get a blaze going very fast.
My eyes are squinting in real life here. It was just kind of a terrible waste of Doritos, but in an emergency, they're good kindling
wood.
Well,
it sounds to me like a good use of Doritos, sir.
I like Doritos.
I know you love Doritos. Number 6, here's a good tip about rewarming leftover pizza. To keep the crust from getting chewy when you warm it up in the microwave, put a small amount of water in a glass and put it right in there on the carousel with the pizza. Number 7, when you are on the road and you buy some bananas, you usually need to buy a bunch of, say, 4 or 5 of them. Then they all get ripe in a day or so and you end up throwing them away. Next time, wrap the stems where they all connect with plastic wrap. This will keep them fresh for a week or more. Then you just cut the bananas off as needed. So there you go. Jennifer's Life Hacks for RVers. We'll list them on the show notes for this episode at roadtrekking.com/60. And if you have some tips that you'd like to share, leave me an audio message by clicking on the leave voicemail link on the roadtrekking.com blog.
Questions. You've got them. Mike and his network of road trekking reporters have the answers. Here's one of our listener RV questions of the week.
I'm Mike. My name is Andrew Maria Laird. I'm picking up my new old 2006 RS Adventurer Freightliner diesel with a Mercedes engine, the Sprinter model. I need a manual for that particular model if you happen to have it with all the available options. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Oh, we can help her with that. Everybody needs a manual. Well, I tell you what, we have a link on the blog. If you go to roadtrekking.com/manuals, and it will take you actually to the Road Trek corporate site, and there they have a service on Road Trek's website that lets you find and download all of the manuals for every model Road Trek ever made, all the way back to 1987. So, first of all, everybody should probably go do that and then just keep it on your computer as you travel. Put it on your iPad or your tablet or whatever it is.
That is a great service. Everybody needs a manual. And when you get the older ones, you know, you need a manual.
Yep.
Newer ones, you can lose the manual.
And things change. Sometimes they change policy and they, you know, procedures. Every time they build a new model, it's a little different. And I know one of the engineers at Road Trek, Jan Seiner, he spends much of his day updating those manuals. So they're constantly a work in progress and you can always download the latest version of it. at just go to, I made an easy link to it so you can find it. If you went to their website, it's like a 450 character word, nobody would remember it. But if you go to, just can remember, roadtrekking.com/manuals, and you will find one for your model all the way back to 1987. Well, let's see. We've got a lot of email. We had some great reaction to episode 59, last week's episode, where we talked about that really cool book about festivals.
Well, that it's fine. Everybody needs a destination.
We were reading through that even over the last week, and it's a big book. It's kind of like a coffee table book, so it takes up a little space. We find it actually will fit really nice in those little racks on the side of our door in the RV, but it's a great book about all the festivals around. Well, we got an email here. I just want to read it. This comes from Jack O'Brien, and he says, just listened to podcast on the podcast on the festival book with Don Vaughn. Cool. We just returned from the Albuquerque Balloon Festival, which is, he says, is in the book. Then the Texas State Fair, which he says is also in the book. And Tyler Texas Rose Festival, which is in the book. And he says the Rose Festival was unbelievable. He says, put it on your list, the Texas Pageantry and the Rose Queen Festival Coronation, he said, were so fantastic and unexpected from our big city East Coast eyes. People connected with the festival couldn't believe we read about the festival in a book, and all the way from Philadelphia. So I'm glad you got that book, Jack, and that you were able to check out the Tyler Texas Rose Festival. Doesn't that sound fun? You love roses.
I love roses. I used to have about 40 of them in our yard until I decided they were just too much work.
They were a lot of work. You were always out there. All right, so that came in from Jack this week. Here's one that came in from a reader named Bob, and he says, hi, Mike. Thought you might find this unusual travel atlas interesting. And he gives us a link to it's called the Geek Atlas. Places that are related to science and technology. We'll put a link on the website. It says it's nicely researched. It's a list of 128 destinations, many of them in the U.S., where you can see interesting science or technology-related exhibits and museums. So for those engineering-minded or those who love tech, we'll put a link to that. It's called the Geek Atlas. And thank you, Bob, for letting us know about all of that. All right, we got lots to do on the rest of this program, and we got to get ready for our big trip down to Kissimmee, Florida next week for the Road Trek International Tech Rally. That's going to be fun.
And I want to go outside and enjoy this beautiful weather. It's like 73, 75 degrees in Michigan right now for a couple of days.
Yeah, we are like, it's supposed to be like in the 30s and 40s usually this time of year. And it's perfect weather.
And blue sky, and it is absolutely gorgeous out there.
All right. I bet you're going to make me do some yard work, though.
I'd like to.
Yeah, we got to do some yard work. Get ready for another season of travel. We got another 3 weeks on the road that we're about ready to head off. Thank you, my dear.
Well, my pleasure.
Want to be part of the podcast? Ask a question, leave a comment.
Look on the right side of Mike's RoadTrekking.com blog and click the send voicemail button. We welcome listener voices and love your questions.
Well, sponsoring this part of the podcast is Van City RV in St. Louis, Missouri, and their partner dealerships, Creston RV in Kalispell, Montana, and Wagon Train RV in Las Vegas, bringing you the largest inventory of Class Bs from three different locations. All three have a great fly and drive program. They'll pick you up from the airport. They'll reimburse you $500 towards your airfare. And then when you come to get your RV will be fully prepared for travel, complete with full tanks of fuel and propane. Here's Dan, the van man, with this week's specials.
Thanks, Mike. Hey, we had a great response on our fall inventory reduction sale. Got a few units left. You can check those out at our website at vancityrv.com, crestonrv.com, and wagontrailrv.com. Got some great used inventory in on trade, too. You can check those out at the websites. Got some nice B-pluses. I got a 2010 Road Trek RS Adventurous, 48,000 miles, ready to roll. Check those out at the website or give us a call at 1-800-467-3905.
News. Mike's got news. RV news, travel news, tips and trends about the small motorhome lifestyle. Here's the Road Trekking news of the week.
Well, have you followed what's happened in Death Valley? One of the most interesting national parks anywhere in the country, I think, is the Death Valley National Park. And man, did they get hit by the worst flooding ever in their history. And as a result of this, the national park is facing months of recovery time, largest flood in its history. And as a result, mud-filled buildings left in the wake, roads that were literally cleaved in half, the electricity out throughout much of the park. Almost 3 weeks now after the largest flood event in recorded history in the area. And that's a quote, the largest flood event in recorded history of the area. About 3 weeks ago, washed through Death Valley National Park, and officials are trying to come up with a recovery plan. And they say it is likely going to take them months and tens of millions of dollars to carry out. Probably the worst hit by the storm, which hit on October 18th, was Scotty's Castle. It's a gorgeous, historic highlight in Death Valley. And the castle, just a magnificent mansion in the northern end of the park up Grapevine Canyon there, built back in 1922 by Albert Johnson, a Chicago insurance tycoon. A beautiful castle-like structure named after Walter Scott, who was a desert rat who made a living by convincing investors to stake their his supposed prospecting in Death Valley. Well, anyway, the mansion, as a result of this, battered by this flood, an outbuilding used for the visitor center, thick layer of mud on the floor, water damage. Some exterior walls of the mansion have mud almost halfway up the doors. 10 miles of highway leading to the complex located in Grapevine Canyon swept away. And all this is in an area that only gets about 2 inches of rain a year. Well, they got 2 inches in one fell swoop back in October from a series of storms that passed over Death Valley mid-October. And all of that came at once, and it just wiped the park up. And there are some Landsat images I got from the United States Geological Survey. I'll put a link to a story that shows you how bad that was. But amazing. Flash floods from that storm, destroying roads and utilities and the historical structures besides that mansion, also damaged. Largest flood event in recorded history in the area in mid-October. So if that's where you were planning on visiting over the next few months, understand that there's going to probably be a lot of reconstruction going on. And best to the Park Service. They've got a tremendous job on their hands. Grizzly bear story. Seems like we have a new one every week. And this one is up from Alberta. And Alberta provincial officials say that they're going to have to destroy a grizzly bear that injured itself by trying to break into a camper and vehicles in Kanaskis County, not too far from Calgary there. This happened earlier in the week. The bear injured a paw and its mouth. It was trying to force its way into an unoccupied camper in the Mount Kidd RV park. And this according to Jill Sawyer of Alberta Park. She said that the camper was very responsibly kept. There was no food in it. This bear is believed to be a 23-year-old female that damaged vehicles in that same park earlier in October. And the folks there who take care of animal management say it has now the potential of being aggressive or defensive. Not a collared bear, but it's known through the DNA analysis that they did from the October 6th incident. They're trying to track the bear, so they've added warning advisories. The bear just doesn't have any fear of humans and has not hurt anybody, but breaking into an RV and it did hurt itself. The problem, they say, is because of bad food, dismal berry season. This has affected grizzly bears throughout Canada and also, you know, Montana and Wyoming, Idaho, all of them noting that just a bad berry crop for them. And so they're ranging very far. They're hungry. They're looking for food. They're trying to put on more food, more weight for the hibernation season. So it's been a tough time with bears. And I noticed we were down at Great Smoky Mountain National Park, and they had a bad berry crop down there, too. And the traditional food had, they were noting the littler, smaller black bears that populate that area were winding their way into town, into Gatlinburg, into even Valley Forge, wide ranging, you know, all over the place. We saw three cubs that were up in a tree eating some kind of nuts that they don't normally eat. So not just in Alberta, but sad to see a bear destroyed, but a bear that was breaking into a camper. And again, it's all this illustrates that we really need to have clean campsites. When they tell you, when you go into a campsite and they say, this is bear country, you know, clean up, take that very seriously. Take it very seriously. So that's our bear story of the week. Okay, here's what we talked about earlier in the program that you want to know. The winter forecast for 2015-2016. Now, as I speak this, it is absolutely fantastic weather. We're recording this on November 3rd of 2015, and it's like in the mid-70s. It's absolutely beautiful, perfect weather, gorgeous weather. Well, hang on. According to the Farmer's Almanac, the winter of 2015-16 is looking like it's going to be a repeat of last winter, at least in terms of temperatures. With some unseasonably cold conditions over the Atlantic seaboard, the eastern portions of the Great Lakes, and the lower peninsula of Michigan, Ohio, Kentucky, most of Tennessee, most of Mississippi in the Mississippi Valley, as well as the Gulf Coast, all of that experiencing unseasonably cold conditions. However, it will be different. Let me give you the whole forecast. And again, the New Englanders, you can expect very cold winter again, kind of deja vu for you folks. Much of the central U.S., the central states, are going to see near normal winter conditions. And this includes the western and central Great Lakes area, the upper peninsula of Michigan. They always get snow up there. That's why we're going up there, by the way, in the end of January for our annual winter campout. That's going to be pretty fun. Wisconsin, Indiana, Illinois, most of the Great Plains, you're going to get normal winter conditions. In those areas, mixed intervals, unseasonably mild temperatures like we're having right now, with occasional shots of bitter Arctic vortex cold. You average it out, it comes out average. So there you go for the Midwest. Texas and favorite snowbird areas, the South Central states, they say it's going to be cooler than normal. Cold winter, maybe even in some place. Nothing too extreme, but not as warm as you perhaps would like. Further west over the Rockies, the Colorado Plateau, the Pacific Northwest, the Southwest states, milder than normal temperatures, influenced greatly by a very intense El Nino, warm weather currents from the Pacific. So figure it's going to be like last year a lot, which was a bitterly cold, shivery winter in many states. The 23 eastern states that experienced one of their top 10 coldest Februarys on record may get the same thing this year. Many of the same states want to get a jump start now, so stock up on your sweaters, long johns, and firewood. Precipitation-wise, if you like snow, well, head out to the northern and central Great Plains, most of the north central states, the Great Lakes, New England. Oh, boy, I'm sorry, you folks up around Boston, you're getting a lot of snow, they say again this year. Parts of the Ohio Valley where snowier than normal conditions are also forecast. Over in the northeast, the mid-Atlantic states, the winter will be stormy, good chance of lots of snow. Farmer's Almanac is red flagging the second week of January and the second week of February for possible heavy winter weather with a long, drawn-out spell of stormy weather extending through much of the first half of March. So sharpen those skis and those snowboards. For those of you who are not escaping as snowbirds, you're sure we're not going to want to be out driving around on that. And let's see, what else is in? An active storm track going to bring above-normal precipitation to the southeast as well as the Mississippi Valley. I have a really good map that I'll post in the show notes section of this, as well as a link to the Farmer's Almanac itself. You can read their forecast. Go to roadtrekking.com/60. You'll find all of that there. Can we believe it? Well, you know, I did this last year. I did the Farmer's Almanac prediction for last year, and it was pretty accurate. It was exactly what we had. So I don't know. I don't know how they do it, but they seem to do a pretty good job, and that's their forecast. Doesn't mean it's going to happen, and the weather prognosticators who are official and have titles after their names will scoff at the notion, but hey, the Farmer's Almanac The reason we pay attention is because it's come true before. So who knows if they can predict it that far out, but that's what they're saying. If you want to see the map I'm just talking about, I'll put that report to their news story that's out on this on the show notes, roadtrekking.com/60. This portion of the podcast brought to you by Aldi, A-L-D-E, and that is the only name in heat that you need to know about for your RV. The Aldi system is a hydronic system, and it brings you so many features, so many benefits that you can't find on any other product. For one thing, that hydronic system is a silent radiant heat. It provides a very warm, even, natural heated interior for your RV. It's great for pets. Interior space is, you get more of it from Aldi because it essentially combines two systems in one, your heating system for the air and then also your hot water system. It is incredibly efficient. The whole system draws less than 1 amp on 12 volts DC. It will extend then the life of your propane about 40% over forced air. You can heat with electric or gas, propane. Multiple options and amenities. Our favorite is the floor heat. You can have heated floors. We do a lot of cold weather camping, Jennifer and I do. And having those heated floors just make it so nice. So there you go. The Aldi system. It is the only name you need to know when choosing a heating system for your RV. They're available in several different RV models from several different manufacturers. Tell your dealer you want Aldi, A-L-D-E, the only name you need to know when choosing a heating system for your RV.
Traveling with technology. It's time now for our RV tech tip of the week.
Okay, finding the right restaurant and at the right time. I don't know how much eating out you do when you travel. We do probably too much of it. That's one of the problems that we face because we get in our RV and we say, woohoo, we are on vacation. And sometimes you want to eat like you're on vacation, and there's always places to explore and lots of restaurants. So I've got three apps I want to share for our traveling tech tip this week. Apps that will help you find restaurants near you, and you can even make reservations at these restaurants through the app. So it's pretty good. And this is these are apps that work with almost any platform out there. If you use iOS, Apple, even the Apple Watch, or if you use Android, these apps will work with that. They work with Windows as well, a couple of them. So lots of, no matter what phone system you are on, it's going to work for you. So let me get the first one. I'm going to pick three apps for you. The first one is called OpenTable. And this is kind of a venerable site, probably one of the older sites that's been around for a while. It's connected directly with 32,000 restaurants throughout North America and in other places in the world as well. So it makes it really easy for you to go onto this app and then discover and find restaurants right near your location. You can search by location. You can search by the type of cuisine you're interested in having. And what I like about this app is that then you can make a reservation. You simply pick your date, your time, your party size. It will show you what available tables there are for then. And then you can book that a reservation with just pressing a button on your smartphone. The app is free. It's called OpenTable. It works with all Apple devices on iOS, Android, and Windows as well. And again, don't worry about this. If you're driving, as you're listening to this, I have in the show notes page of this, you can find direct links to these apps so you don't have to write them down. But OpenTable, here's another one, Zomato, or is it Zomato? You say Zomato, I say Zomato. But whatever, just think tomato with a Z. That's the name of this app. And it kind of does the same thing. It's aimed at helping you find restaurants. They have about 10,000 cities across the area or across the country that are connected to this app. You select the region and the kind of food you're in the mood for, and then it will give you the most up-to-date menus from those restaurants as well as pictures. And I like this, user reviews, so you can see what other people say. If you want to check out a new restaurant, Zomato even gives you a map, so it will vector you into that. It's free for iOS, for Android, for Windows devices as well. Now, what about those of you who maybe have more distinguished tastes? You want to look at Local Eats. This app has listings of the best and dining options that you'll find anywhere around, ratings from magazines, from newspapers, dining sites, and other reputable reviewers. And it, too, allows you to filter restaurants by local areas, and as you can even choose by whatever you want to find in terms of, you know, of cuisine. I like Local Eats a lot because the this is kind of the best of the best, and they have really reputable reviews. And when I talk about reputable reviews, this is the secret that a lot of people don't realize when you read reviews online. It's that lots of times the reviews are fake. You can actually hire people to go post good reviews on your business. And so a lot of people do that. So you always want to have some kind of a screening mechanism for it. And Local Eats, I like that because they only use the reviews that come from newspapers, magazines, third-party disinterested sites, you know, that are not being paid to give them a good review. And it allows you to find the restaurant. So, and I also like it because it's really local. It helps you find what's right near you. So check those out. Local Eats, Zomato, or Open Table. Three great apps that'll help you find cool restaurants near you. This part of the podcast brought to you by Verizon Wireless, the nation's largest and most reliable 4G LTE network. You know that feeling of dread when your phone slips through your hands and you reach to flip it over and you hope that that crunching sound you heard was not your screen cracking against the ground? Well, that fear will forever be a distant memory if you pick up the brand new Motorola Droid Turbo 2 with the Moto Shatter Shield technology. This is actually the first smartphone that has a shatterproof display, and it's available exclusively from Verizon. Moto Shatter Shield's display, it is an integrated system. It consists of five layers designed from materials that absorb shock from impact, and they're proven not to crack or shatter. The Droid Turbo 2 also provides up to 48 hours of battery life. It's the world's fastest charging smartphone. This whole Droid line is really pretty cool. There's a brand new, another Droid that they just came out. It's the Droid Max 2, and it's designed with the essentials in mind. You get that 48-hour battery life, a 21-megapixel camera, turbo power charging, which gives you 8 hours of use with just a 15-minute charge. Is that cool or what? And a 5.5-inch full HD display. So you still get those awesome features that Droid has to offer at a great price point. Go look at the whole lineup. Just go to VerizonWireless.com and you can learn more, or you can purchase a brand new Droid from Verizon. Check it out.
What's happening? Time now to check the RV calendar of events and gatherings you need to know about.
Hey, I'm going to this one. Jennifer and I will be in Florida, in Kissimmee, Florida, next week. This one starts Tuesday, November 10th, and it runs the 10th, 11th, 12th, and 13th of 2015. It is the Technology and Camping Rally, organized by Dave Gottdiner, and this is with the Road Trek International chapter of the Family Motor Coach Association. Now, this is for Region 5, but that you can come from anywhere you want. It's in Kissimmee, Florida, which is a great location, right in the central part of the state. It's not far from Disney at all, and Epcot and Universal, all that stuff. This is it's all organized around technology and camping. My buddy Jim and Chris Gould, the Geeks on Tour, will be at this rally, and they'll be running some really great sessions on how to work Windows, smartphones, iPods, iPads, tablets, cloud storage. They're going to teach you all that stuff, digital cameras, how to work Skype, file management, security, Gmail. Chris Gould is an expert in Picasa, which is that free Google picture software. She can help you make videos, and they're going to teach you all of that stuff. They're not firm on any of those subjects. They'll kind of ask the crowd what they want to learn, and they'll teach them. These are great, great little events. It's not a huge rally, so you really get to know everybody that's there, and it's pretty reasonable. They'll work you out. The site fee is like 30, 35 bucks a night, whatever you want. I think I took one. The one I got was $35 a night. So we booked that. And it's a really good place. They're staying at Tropical Palms. It is a full-fledged RV resort. And there are a lot of people there. They'll assign you the site. You just call directly. I'll put a link in the show notes and you can call and directly and get a spot there. That's in Kissimmee, Florida. And then there's a rally fee, which is just simply 15 bucks a person. And that includes you get a potluck dinner on Tuesday. And then Wednesday and Thursday dinners are catered meals, fully catered. And you get that for 15 bucks a person. That's pretty good. So lots of free time to talk, and you can look at everybody's road trucks or RVs. You can play games. These are basically road trucks that'll be there, Class B motorhomes, and you can play games. You can ride bikes to nearby Celebration. You can walk to Old Town, travel to Downtown Disney. It's not far from Disney World and Epcot Center and Universal. And our friends from Leisure Time RV are going to be there. They're going to have some road trucks on display, some of the brand new ones there, and they'll also have a tech on site who can help you with minor repairs for your vehicle. So you cannot beat this. They still have some openings, but you better call quick. Jennifer and I just found out about it, and I decided to make it the RV calendar of the week function, and we're going to be there. We booked our space this morning, and we look forward to actually just hanging out. Just hanging out. But the theme of the event is technology, and everybody always love it. They learn stuff about email. The geeks on tour, like I say, are there, and there'll be others that will be teaching stuff. And Dan Martin does a really great overview of the RV's electrical system and more. And there's a great social hours every day, and you just will have a ball. So if you can do it, get down there to Kissimmee, Florida, for the Technology and Camping Rally. This is November 10th through the 13th, and Jennifer and I will be there. So we are really kind of looking forward to that, and we hope to see you there.
Time now for Off the Beaten Path,
a unique road trekking RV podcast travel suggestion
you probably won't find in a guidebook.
Here's Mike.
Well, thank you, thank you. Hey, this tip comes from, this Off the Beaten Path report comes from our Road Trekking Facebook group. Have you been there, by the way, yet? I mean, there is so much material on there, and it's posted all throughout the day, all throughout the night, 24/7. We've got, you got to join the group. So we don't accept everybody because we get a lot of, you know, we try and keep spammers out. We've got moderators who keep everything positive and fun, but it's a great service. It's go to Road, if you're on Facebook, go to facebook.com/groups/road trekking. facebook.com/groups/road trekking. I'll put a link on our show notes page. But anyway, this came from that group. Dan Michaud, who's been on the midst of a three-month cross-country trip in his RV, filed this and shared it with everybody with some great photos. We'll put a link to that as well and a couple of pictures on the blog show notes. But if you're interested in the night sky, or maybe you just want to learn a little bit more about it while being entertained, Dan came across a must-see for all those who are located or traveling within an hour or so of Phoenix, Arizona. It's called the Star Barn, and it's located in Cave Creek, Arizona, and it is the personal love affair of Ron Walker with the night sky and everything astronomical. With movies and sound. Dan wrote this great report for our Road Trekking Facebook group, telling everybody, you got to go see this. A couple of years ago, Ron Walker put in a bid on, at an auction on a 1976 vintage planetarium. And the good news is he got the bid. The bad news is he got the bid because now he had to build a light-proof 30-foot geodesic dome to house it and assemble and restore the planetarium with its 106 projectors and myriad control panels and accessories. Well, the result, says Dan Michaud, is simply amazing. At the suggestion of a friend, Dan contacted Ron when his wife and he were in the area not long ago, and they continued on. They were part of their See America road trip as he's traveling across the country. And the Michauds says that this guy was great. He has a schedule of showings, and he brought them in, and they saw his Introduction to the Night Sky and a laser light show orchestrated to Pink Floyd's Dark Side of the Moon. And they saw this at 10 a.m. on a Sunday morning. night sky and the Milky Way and all of its glory. Dan says, I didn't have to get up at 3 a.m. This was great. And he learned more about it in the incredible vista that they have over our heads when we go to sleep every night. So if you're interested, we'll put a link for, to how to, you can contact Ron. And then you just, if you're in that area, and just say, hey, can I come by? Do you have a showing? And he'll let you know what his schedule is. But this is the kind of story we just love to tell. It's just so much fun. You just find these great stories. They're off the beaten path. Nobody knows about them except some locals. And here's a guy that loves to show off what he did. So check this all out, and we'll put a link. And thanks to Don Michaud for filing that on our Road Trekking Facebook group. This part of the podcast sponsored by Leisure Time RV, a family-owned dealership in Winter Garden, Florida, near Orlando. These guys have been in business for 45 years, consistently ranked among the top road track dealers in all of North America. They carry a full line of road track inventory, as well as travel trailers, as well as used RVs. Jennifer, I have visited Leisure Time RV. In fact, we'll meet with those guys next week when we're down there at that RV rally in Kissimmee. They're really great guys. You'll love the whole staff. It's just a great team there. We visited them. We know them and very impressed by how honest and integrity and how much they like to deal. And they sell all over the country. People call them up. You know, you're shopping for a road truck, no matter where you are in the country, call them up and hey, this is what I'm looking for. And they'll give you a price, and they're incredibly competitive. Let's check in with Ken Prentice, our friend Ken at Leisure Time RV. And Ken will tell you why you want to come by there, because you can start your RV vacation trip in Florida.
Hi, Mike. It's Ken at Leisure Time RV in sunny Winter Garden, Florida. It seems winter is coming early. Snow has already fallen in some states. Wouldn't you rather pick up your road trek in warm weather, go to the beach, golf, see all that Florida has to offer? We have a great selection of road treks with great deals, including incentive money from Road Trek, thousands of dollars, on new 2015 road treks on 2014 chassis. Don't wait. Call us at 1-800-336-6565 or email at admin@leisuretimerv.com for your best deal. We can even help with the flight costs. It doesn't matter where you live. We've sold folks all over the U.S. Call us before you buy. We're very competitive. Call 1-800-336-6565 or email at admin@leisuretimerv.com. Check out our inventory at www.leisuretimerv. See you in sunny Florida. Don't forget, your vacation starts at Leisure Time RV.
You're listening to Road Trekking,
the podcast.
You can find show notes, links to resources and websites Mike and his guests mention, and background material, videos and photos on the roadtrekking.com RV travel blog.
And you can also send Mike a voice question to answer on the podcast.
From the blog, just click the send voicemail button.
That's at roadtrekking.com.
The small motorhome RV travel blog.
Travel blog.
One of my favorite road trekking buddies is Gary Bunzer. Gary is known far and wide as the RV doctor. And I don't know, I guess we asked him in an interview a long time ago how he came up with that name, but it really is applicable to Gary. Gary knows everything there is to know about RVs. I mean, ask him anything. You cannot stump this man. And he has been there, whether you have a Class A, a Class B, a Class C, a fifth wheel, a travel trailer, a towable, whatever the question, Gary knows. And we ran into him at the Hershey show a month or two ago, and we got we had dinner, and a bunch of us had dinner. I didn't get a chance to speak to Gary as much as I'd like to, and so I got him on the podcast because I thought it's just great to take a look at all the things that we need to know. And so I asked Gary, can you come up with five things that every RVer must know and be able to do themselves? And he said, five? I can come up with a whole lot more than that. Well, we asked him to do five, and he did. And the test of this is whether I could do them, because if I can do them, really anybody can do them. Well, after listening to Gary, I think I can do them. And I think you're going to love this interview. Gary Bunzer, the RV doctor. And Gary, by the way, is a regular contributor to most of the, if you go to big RV rallies around the country, all of the Family Motor Coach Association rallies, he is there. He puts on seminars all day long at almost every major RV rally anywhere in the country. He's also a regular contributor to Family Motor Coach magazine and writes a monthly column there as well. He's my pal, and I think he will be yours too. Gary Bunzer, the RV doctor. Well, joining us now is the expert. He's the man that's known as the RV doctor. You've read all of his columns in the FMCA Family Motor Coaching magazine. You've seen him at rallies around the country, and he joins us now on the podcast. Gary Bunzer, the RV doctor. How you doing, Gary?
Hey, Mike, it's good to hear from you. I'm doing well. And I know you've been busy, so I really appreciate all that you do as well.
Well, thank you. And nothing like what you do, though, and keeping us going. And this is the time of year now. Everybody's starting to think about settling down. The snowbirds are migrating to sit for a while in the sun, and the others are putting their RVs in storage. It's a time to sort of think about what projects we want to do, and nobody better than the RV doctor to come up with some projects that just about any RVer can do. So what? Let's start in top of the list. What's the first thing that even I can do?
Well, I'll tell you what, Mike. I've got a whole bunch of things that that I recommend that are in regard to specific winterizing procedures, but. This is something I've got some topics I think would be interesting to the listeners that regardless of whether you're going to use your RV in the winter, you're heading south as a snowbird, or you're just going to put it up for storage, I've got some things that I think would be interesting, and they're not presented in any particular order. I didn't rate them as far as, you know, the top one, but one of the obvious top ones would be to make sure that your RV, whatever type of RV it may be, doesn't matter. Make sure that there are no propane leaks in the coach.
Mm.
Obviously, it's a good idea not to have any propane leaks as you're using the RV or as you're driving down the road. And as for professional technicians, there's a whole prescribed set of procedures. But as RV owners, here's something that they can do, and I encourage them to do, is to take just simple dishwashing detergent. As long as it's not ammonia-based, as long as there's no ammonia in it, they can take a little bit of that dishwashing detergent, mix it in with just regular water, put it in a little spray bottle, and then just simply turn on the propane fuel, however it's stored on that particular coach, and just spray down all of the attaching points, all of the connections that you could actually see and get to. Now, on some travel trailers, you may have an underbelly, and it's covered up and you really can't see it, but you'd be surprised if you start looking, look under cabinet doors on the interior of the coach, wherever the propane container is located, and just spray those down with that mixture of water and liquid detergent to where you have a soapy solution. It'll feel soapy and it'll be a little thicker viscosity than plain water. And if there's a leak anywhere in that system, it'll blow a bubble and you'll see exactly where those propane leaks are.
So it's kind of
something that you can do during downtimes, especially when you're going to get ready for spring or getting ready to put the coach into storage, like right now in the fall. So I think it's a good time to do it at least two or three times a year. And then once a year, have the pros go through it and run the specific regulator tests and all of those things that go with that.
So that is such good advice, because I get, and I'm sure you do too, I get a little news alerts every time something about RV is mentioned in the news. And the most of the time it's about an RV fire, and most of the time it's caused by propane and a propane leak. So this is something that even I could do with a little spray bottle. And if you find that leak, then you take it to a pro, right, for repair?
Yeah, now it's typically a mechanical connection. So if you've got a couple wrenches and always use a backup wrench on propane fittings, you can, you know, give it a little tweak and see if you can tighten it and make that bubble go away. At least you'll know for sure that that you're safe and that you've conquered that leak. But if there's one leak, there could be others. And by code, all of the connections have to be accessible, but that doesn't mean you might not necessarily have to disassemble half the RV to get to it, but you should be able to find the majority of the leaks or the majority of the connections in the propane piping system. And then on top of that, I also recommend all RVers carry a spare regulator as you travel. My goodness, you've got four propane burning appliances typically in every RV, and if that regulator, I call it the hardest working device in an RV, if it goes south or becomes fouled for any reason, then you won't be able to use any of the four appliances. And it's easily replaced in the field as long as you had some thread sealant. Anybody with common hand tools can replace the regulator. You can't you can't install it backwards because the inlet and outlet are two different sizes. So it's always a wise idea to carry a spare.
Where do you find a propane regulator? Where does one buy those? At a Camping World or RV dealer?
Any of the big Camping World stores or any RV dealer will typically have them in stock. I don't know if I've ever walked into any dealership that did not have them in stock, at least for their own use. And if they didn't have an accessory store, they can certainly order you one as well. Make sure it's the right type for your type of an RV. For instance, on a motorhome with a typical ASME horizontal tank that's bolted to the frame, the vent portion has to point downward. So it'll be different design than the one, say, between two DOT cylinders on the tongue of a travel trailer.
Sure.
So make sure you buy the one like that's in the coach now and just carry a spare and carry some thread sealant with you. Couple hand tools and you'll be good to go if that thing ever goes south on you when you're in the middle of a trip.
That's good. How do you know when the regulator is bad? Just the propane
that's
doesn't
a,
come
that's
on?
That's a great question. That is a very good question. Like the symptom that I recommend that I tell my seminar attendees is if you have an operational problem with more than one of the appliances at the same time. In other words, it's not uncommon for the refrigerator to have a dirty orifice and not cool properly, or the furnace to have a flame issue of its own, and it may be internal to that appliance. But if you have something not working properly on more than one, say two or three of the appliances, then you can almost suspect it might be a regulator or a pressure issue, which is regulator controlled. So if you have to have the same type of operational problem on more than one appliance, and that typically means it's the regulator somewhere near the regulator.
Gotcha. So we look for propane leaks. We carry a spare regulator, which I'm making a note of this because it's time for me to head to the store, the RV store, anyway, so I might as well get mine.
I should sell these things.
You should sell these things. Or maybe I should sell these things. Hey, wait a minute.
Yeah,
we could go into business together. Yeah, we could call the RV
there
doctors.
You go.
All right, so those are two things. What are some of the other things that we can do?
Oh, one of the issues I've seen lately, and based on the amount of emails that I get to the RV doctor column at in FMC Magazine, is underpowered battery banks or the lack of charging power to charge up these big battery banks. Some of these coaches have 6, 8, 10 batteries on them, and the charging capability may not be adequate for the amount of storage capacity that you have in your battery bank. This is especially true when you add batteries. We always say it's good to have more battery power than you need, especially if you have a proclivity to do a lot of dry camping or boondocking. So a lot of people add extra batteries. Well, if that's the case and they added more batteries, there's a slight chance that the charging mechanism, whatever it's a converter charger or an inverter charger, may be undersized to fully charge that battery bank back up. There's a formula that I give to my students, and that is the letter C over 5, just as a fraction, C over 5, C being the total amp hour capacity of your battery bank divided by the number 5, the constant number 5. And that will give you the minimum size charging requirements to effectively charge your battery bank up in a decent time frame. So it, just to give you round numbers, if you have a 100 amp hour battery bank, which is relevant to just one group 27 battery, divided by 5, and I do this because I'm not really good at math, I can divide 100 by 5, so my minimum size battery charger should be a 20 amp charger. So take your total amp hour capacity of all the batteries in your battery bank and divide it by 5, and that should give you the preferred charging rate capability of your battery charger.
And this is, again, something that once you realize that, you can easily go to a service shop and pick up a charger you want, or I suppose you could even buy one online as well. So.
Oh, online, Amazon, everything. Yeah. You can get anything on Amazon.
All right.
One of the best things that I like to say in the industry is thank goodness for the aftermarket, because whatever came on your particular RV, there's typically a way to improve upon it, either with a more sophisticated battery charger or a better battery charger, and they're all available in the aftermarket through a dealer or service facility. They can order it up for you or go online, and you can find many, many good deals online as well. So if you have an undersized battery charging device in your unit and you're a serious RVer, then I do recommend that C over 5 formula. for the minimum size of your charging device.
And again, the symptoms that someone would notice is they're running out of juice faster than they thought they would. It's just when they're out boondocking, they don't get nearly the time. That's a good indication that you've got something wrong with the system.
Exactly. If your furnace fan runs the battery dead overnight, over a weekend, or the lights go dim while you're dry camping, and you know you just drove 50 miles or 100 miles to get there, you think the battery's fully charged. I maintain them that the majority of coaches that leave dealerships and leave the home bases of the RV owner himself, typically they've never attained 100% fully charged. So it's always wise to fully charge your battery bank before any excursion. And it's the same thing when you're going to put your coach in storage or winterize it for the year. You want to make sure the batteries are fully charged before any period of non-use, because the batteries will self-deflate just based on the nature of lead-acid batteries anyway. So if you've got a lead-acid battery or an AGM battery, fully charge that battery bank before you put it in storage, and then once again when you take it out of storage and get ready for that first excursion.
Just a related question to that. When you store your RV, do you recommend that they disconnect the battery?
I do. I do recommend battery disconnect switches that do it automatically just by flipping a switch inside the coach. And again, those are available in the aftermarket as well. The old school way is just to disconnect the negative cable on the last battery that gets grounded into that system, so you can effectively eliminate any drains happening inside the RV. But every battery is going to self-discharge itself over time anyway. But I do recommend battery disconnect switches, absolutely.
Okay, good. Now, that's three of our tips. We always go with five, so let's see what else we got on your list.
Oh, we're going to go to five. Okay, I thought this isn't a 90-minute show, then. I've got a list of about 30. No, I'm just joking.
I ought to hold you to that. Yes, it is, as a matter of fact. See if we could do it. Okay. Number four.
One of the other things I do want to mention, and this is this leads to the number one cause of RV damage, and that is simply based on polls that have been taken, based on insurance claims. The number one cause of damage is water intrusion. This maintains the fact that you've got to inspect your seams, your edge moldings, your clearance lights, windows, doors, anything that's attached to. If you ever take a look at what is literally attached to the outside of your RV, and some of these things are, 45 feet long, so there's a lot of stuff screwed to these coaches, and every screw attachment point is a potential water leak, and the number one cause of damage is water intrusion. So I do really recommend that RV owners very closely inspect all the seams, edges, antennas, roof, air conditioners, anything up on the top of the RV as well as on the sides and the front and rear cap. Once water gets in, it can flow just about anywhere. It's fed by gravity, powered by gravity, so once water gets in, it may not manifest itself until it reaches the floor level or a ceiling stain at the back of the coach when the leak happens at the front of the coach. So that's very important to regularly check that. And I say do that at least twice a year, once before you put it into storage, especially if you're in cold climates. You don't want snow melt or rain or wind to blow underneath a piece of caulking or butyl tape that has come loose. So periodically, once or twice a year, get up there and take a look at everything that's attached to the exterior of the RV. For those people that really, can't climb up on the RV, maybe they don't have a ladder up there, or it's just quite dangerous on some of these coaches, you have to be very, very careful. So I caution people about that. But there is a service out there that people can find that will guarantee with 100% certainty if there's any leaks on the exterior of that coach. And that's with a product or a service, basically, by a shop or a technician that uses what's called a Sealtech machine, S-E-A-L-T-E-C-H. If you have a chronic leak problem and you just simply cannot find where that water is coming in to the RV, find a shop. You can go online at SealtechUSA.com and find a listing of service facilities that have this Sealtech machine. It's about $150 to $200 service. But if you have a chronic issue that you can't find yourself, then I do recommend taking it to a pro to find that.
That's a great, great. I'll put a link to that on the show notes here for this episode. Gary, is there something that we should caulk ourselves automatically every year? Any ceilings? Do we go up there? And what do we use if we're going to try and do it ourselves?
Well, you know, that's another good question. Not all sealants are applicable to every type of RV roofing material that's out there. There's about six or seven now with two different types of PVC material, two different types of TPO. There's rubber roofing, EPDM. There's fiberglass. There's aluminum. There's fiberglass reinforced plastic. There's all sorts of types of roofing material that's up there. I would not just slap anything on there. If you do see a crack, one of the things I do recommend is to make sure that whatever sealant you're using, it's applicable for that type of a roof. And that's important because not a lot of RVers actually know what type of roofing material is on the exterior surface on the roof of their coach. So they'll have to either find out from the dealer or from the manufacturer what it is and then buy the appropriate sealant or caulking. I do recommend a roofing system called RV Armor. And if you go to rv-armor.com, this is a one-time application that is guaranteed for life. RVers actually should take a look at that.
And these guys are at almost every big RV rally or show. So, and you can see this stuff. I've seen that as well.
Find it at all the big rallies, and they're working with a lot of dealers now to where a lot of dealers recommend it and can actually apply the RV Armor roof. Again, if you have chronic problems and you really like that RV, and you're definitely going to keep it. The 100% guaranteed way is obviously with an RV Armor roofing system installed. But if you're going to do it yourself, the most important thing to remember is to only apply the sealant, the caulking, the butyl tape, whatever it is that you're going to be sealing with, make sure it's applicable to the surface to which you're applying it.
Good advice. One more tip that we can all do.
One more. Oh, my goodness. Well, I think probably the most important, and this probably should have been number one, is that when RVers travel, you have to be very careful where you plug that coach into. Virtually every RV has a shore power cord, whether it be a small 20-amp power cord, a 30-amp power cord, or a big four-conductor 50-amp power cord. Never plug into a strange or different receptacle without first doing two things. And this is crucial because this hinges on the safety aspect, and sometimes the ramifications could actually be catastrophic. You want to, number one, measure the incoming voltage. Whatever voltage is coming in, I encourage all RVers to carry their own volt ohmmeter with them. Learn how to use it. There's plenty of websites that are available that you can learn how to use a simple volt ohmmeter. They're relatively inexpensive at any of the big box stores. Measure the incoming voltage and make sure it falls within the specifications as required by the National Electric Code, and that is 120 volts plus or minus 5%. Now, I didn't do the math on this one, so you'll have to break out a calculator to see that. But 120 volts plus or minus 5% is the recommended incoming voltage where it's safe to plug in the coach. Now, that's only step one. Step number two is to verify the polarity of that voltage. And what that means is that you have to make sure that the hot wire is where hot should be, the neutral wire is where the neutral wire should be, and the safety ground wire is where the ground wire should be in that receptacle that you're plugging into. And the only way to test that safely is with a device that you can buy at any big box store for $12, $14. It's called a non-contact proximity voltage tester. It looks like a pen. I've got one in my hand right here, and it basically, you stick it into the holes of the receptacle, and it will only beep or light up, depending on the brand. It'll only light up when it senses positive voltage. So if you stick it in the neutral conductor hole of the receptacle and it beeps, then that tells you there's something wrong with that particular, the polarity is wrong with that particular receptacle. So this is at a campground. This is at your daughter-in-law's house. This is at a convenience store that you plug into overnight, wherever you may stay. Wherever you're going to plug in, two steps, measure the voltage, and number two, verify the polarity of that voltage.
So two things we need to
get. Two steps.
We need to get two things with these, a volt ohmmeter, which we can get, mm-hmm. like you say, pretty well. And I love it. A non-contact polarity voltage tester.
Yeah, non-contact proximity voltage tester. Yeah.
Why don't they just call it the polarity tester?
Thing. Yeah. Well, it's because it does more than polarity. We use it in the shop for checking for opens in the wiring and short circuits and things of that nature. It comes in handy for other testing as well that would go beyond the scope of the average RVer. But it's made out of plastic, totally safe. With the receptacle in front of you, you stick it in the holes of the receptacle, and it'll either beep or not beep. Now, I do recommend buying one that does have, indeed, an on-off switch because an indication of no beep tells you that there's no voltage. But if that little device has a dead battery, it's not going to beep on any of them, right? So you want to make sure it has an on-off switch. Those that have an on-off switch, when you first turn it on, it goes through a self-test internally to determine that the battery voltage is sufficient, as well as that it's ready now to sense voltage.
Yep.
But a non-contact proximity voltage tester is absolutely necessary. We've had tests where Mike Sokol, a good friend of mine, has run tests where he's found that a $700 ground loop impedance tester, which is a fancy name for big bucks, that it would actually fool that ground loop impedance tester. It would fool a volt ohmmeter. It would fool those little plug-in circuit analyzers that's got the two yellow lights and the mm-hmm. one red light.
Yep, yep.
There is a circumstance out there that will fool those devices. The only way to detect it with 100% certainty is with that non-contact proximity voltage test device, and it could probably come up with a longer name if they really try.
$14 is all it costs, and I think in terms of these two things, how important this is. How common is bad shore power at campgrounds and various parks that we visit? It's
not so much as far as the actual voltage. I mean, you do find a lot of receptacles that are miswired at houses when people want to wire in, have their electrician come in and wire in a receptacle for their RV. If they do not understand electrical wiring in an RV, which is totally different than what's in a house, even though it looks the same, it is actually different. It's got an unbonded neutral. Well, I don't want to get too technical for you, but it's different than what you find in a house. A lot of times we find miswired receptacles actually in other structures other than campgrounds. Some of the older campgrounds do have a problem when they switched from a two-wire system to a three-wire system. We're both old enough to remember back in the 60s when all receptacles inside the house only had two slots. You could plug the lamp in this way, or you could flip it over and plug it in that way. And then they came up with the safety ground wire. And a lot of times, some of the older campgrounds may not have rewired by adding a new conductor. They would have what they call a bootleg ground to ground that receptacle. But you'll see it most commonly in old pole barns or in older residences that went from the old technology to the new three-wire technology. Some campgrounds, we actually shot a little video of this that hasn't been released yet, but when we went to a main brand RV campground to shoot this video to show people how to use this device, we had to move to three different sites just to where we could find a decent receptacle enough to show on videotape.
Really?
They were so worn out. That's the problem in campgrounds, is that we're seeing a lot of worn out receptacles, and we've approached the campground folks about maintaining. We preach maintenance for RVs, but we now have to talk about the preventive maintenance that's required at campgrounds as well. So in order for the RVer to protect himself, measure that voltage and verify the polarity. Don't take for granted that it's wired properly, because if it is improperly wired, you could damage components inside the RV, some sensitive printed circuit boards and things of that nature. So it actually can be crucial. There are a couple circumstances where everything metallic on the RV can become electrified if we don't properly measure and check for the proper polarity.
That is why he is known, folks, as the RV doctor. Gary Bunzer has been our guest. And Gary, I'm going to send them all to your website, and also we'll link them to your columns in the FMCA as well. And as always, it is a pleasure to have you on the podcast. Great advice that everybody, even me, can follow over the next year. Between me and my buddy Chuck, Chuck is the only other guy like me, our buddy Chuck from RV Travel, who scratches his head at all this do-it-yourself stuff. But you're getting us there.
That's great, Mike.
Yeah, that's good. Gary, thanks a million. It's always great to have you in the program.
You're quite welcome. I can't wait till the next time. Have a great day.
Traveling North America in a Class B motor home. This has been Road Trekking the Podcast with journalist Mike Wendland. Got a question for next week? Click the send voicemail link on the roadtrekking.com blog. Till then, we'll see you out there. Road Trekking. Road Trekking.
Well, that does another episode of Road Trekking the RV Podcast. This has been episode number 6060. We'll be back every Wednesday, next Wednesday, with another episode. And again, I want to invite you, if you're in the anywhere around, can get to South Florida or Central Florida, meet us in Kissimmee next week. We'll be there at the big Road Trek International Technology Rally in Kissimmee. Details on the website. We just talked about it a little while ago on the RV calendar. Hey, would you do us a big favor, though? Would you subscribe to this podcast via the app on the Apple iPhone? Just go to, if you have an iPhone, go to the podcast app and find Road Trekking and hit subscribe. You can also subscribe to us through the website as well. We'd appreciate that. That really helps us get noticed and be able to share the small motorhome lifestyle podcast with more people who can find us. Also, leave us a review. We love those five-star reviews that you've been leaving. Thank you so much. They're a great encouragement to us. Check out the Facebook group. Just go to facebook.com/group/roadtrekking and you'll find us there. We're on to 24/7 with lots of people talking about the road trekking lifestyle. Till next Wednesday, we'll see you out there road trekking. Thanks for putting us in your ear.